Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We start with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, you know, over the recent years, I've done that quite a bit on this program. Some of it has been awesome, and some of it has been, well, the opposite of awesome. I've got some of that for you. Jacksonville announced that Tom Coughlin is out as executive VP of football operations. And despite what that first season back in Duval was like, despite the fact that they came this close to the Super Bowl, that's a move they had to make. That's a no-brainer. They had to make that move. It was not a matter of if, but it was a question of when. There was no way ownership was going to bring him back. We knew this. The only issue was, do they wait until the end of the season, or do they do it right now? And now we have the answer. Hit the bricks, Pops.
Hit the bricks, pal.
I'm not here to pile on. I am not here to pile on. In fact, just the opposite. In fact, this one is actually pretty tough because I think y'all know how I feel about Duval. I think you probably know how I feel about a lot of guys in that locker room, except Tom Coughlin had to go. And it's not even about them going 5-11 this year, although that is part of it. 11 last year, I should say. 5-9 this year. Those two marks, it's part of it. It's also in part about the Nick Foles experiment, which has been a disaster, or how badly they handled Gardner Minshew. It's all in part about that. It's not even like totally about him believing in Blake Bortles and then extending him and then cutting him. In part, it's about that. It's not even completely about him drafting Leonard Fournette over to Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes or Taven Bryan instead of Lamar Jackson. Although, honestly, all of these reasons are things you might move a guy out. But that's not in and of itself what it is. What this is about more than anything else right now is a letter from the NFLPA to its constituents earlier this week. And it's the kind of letter you never, ever see. Now, bear with me for a moment while I lay this out. Because while I know there are a few things more boring than talking about labor negotiations or the nuances of the CBA, there is going to be a hammer at the end of this. The letter from the NFLPA to all players outlined how the Jags, under Coughlin, started to require players to have all offseason rehab done at the team facility. When players did not do that, they were fined. For example, Dante Fowler was fined 25 times. 25 times for, quote, mandatory rehab sessions. Those fines totaled 700,000 bucks. Look, I'm no expert in the CBA. I'm no labor law attorney. I'm not an NFL arbiter. But that seems a little excessive to me. And actually, according to Fowler, an arbiter thought that it was a lot excessive because he tweeted that he got all that money back on appeal. And if you think that's a lot of fines for rehab, check out the one fine, a single fine that Leonard Fournette received, $99,000. So what do you have to do to get fined $99,000 by your team for a single incident? Like, what punishment? What crime is going to fit that punishment? Come to find out, he sat on the team bench last year during week 17 when he was inactive with an ankle injury. Huh? For sitting on a bench when he was hurt. They fined him $99,000. What kind of Junction Boys BS is that? Are you running a football team or a SEAL unit? Is it the NFL or is this Hell Week? I mean, I get that you want to instill discipline and toughness and have some of that old school mentality. But exactly what kind of behavior were you trying to correct by fining a guy nearly $100,000 for sitting on the bench and then losing to that player on appeal? I mean, to hear it described this way, it sounds like Coughlin was pitching some sort of late night infomercial, like, find your way to greatness. Find from the front. If your team members don't do exactly as you say, you find their ass. And you keep doing it until you get the response you want. The bench. The bench.
Bench the saw.
The bench is for active players. Hit the bricks, pal.
Hit the bricks, pal.
And leave 100 gur on my desk on your way out. And don't let that door hit you in your bum ass. You're 5 minutes late. You're 5 minutes late. Or I should say 5 minutes early, which makes you 1 hour late on Coughlin time, that'll be a half a mil. Oh, you think that's unfair? Really? You think a half a mil is unfair? Now it's $750. Anything else you want to share? Yeah, that's what I thought. Coughlin, man. Like, solid football guy for sure. Did a great job with the Jags the first time around. Won a couple of rings with the Giants. Nobody can take that from him. But the game is changing, and he obviously is not. He seems to think that you can find your way to greatness, but you can't. I'll tell you what you can do, though. You can drive great players away. The Jags took some heat when Tom Coughlin criticized Jalen Ramsey and Telvin Smith for not showing up to voluntary OTAs in the spring. Key word again, voluntary. That's how it is in the CBA. It's voluntary. Except in Coughlin's world, nothing is voluntary. That word does not exist in his world. So then he's on the wrong side of the wrong guys. Smith decides not to show up at all. He took the year off. Ramsey made it clear he didn't want to be there. And then you have two Pro Bowlers who are no longer on that defense. And then after the news came down, Ramsey took to Twitter and he kept it simple. The eyes emoji and the zippered mouth emoji. He didn't have to say anything. We know exactly where he was going with that. He wasn't talking, but AJ Boye was. He said Jags players had become the butt of jokes because other players could not believe that they were actually getting fined for what they were getting fined for.
In the offseason, you have players from other leagues, they come and ask me about the fines, like, is it true y'all getting fined for stuff like this? And they laugh at us because they think that I'm lying, but now that stuff like this is coming out, it's true we got fined for it. So maybe we'll fix it ahead of time, but one thing I can say, we get fined here, we learn from it, we try to avoid it from here on out, so...
Have you had any issues with getting fined since you've been here?
Yeah, I think one, but it was more of just miscommunication. You know, that was like in 2017 when we were all coming together. You know, I've been taught not to really go to things that don't work for me, but what don't work for me might work for somebody else, and they're going to force everybody to do it. And I didn't show up because I did something else. So I paid the fine, tried the pill. I couldn't take it, but I just was like, all right, even though it doesn't benefit me, I'm still going to do it. So
it sounds to me like the Jags weren't doing a hell of a lot other than fining guys for anything and everything, and then spending a lot of time trying to justify those fines. And then this. According to the NFLPA, more than 25% of the grievances filed by players in the league came against the Jags. And now the hammer I was talking about. The NFLPA told players, quote, "You as players may want to consider this when you have a chance to select your next club," end quote. Boom! As far as a players association communicating with its players, that is the absolute definition of napalm. If you have a chance to choose a club, don't choose this one. If you're thinking about signing with this team, think again. I mean, that's the very definition of toxic. If there was an NFL Yelp, the NFLPA just dropped a one-star review on the Jags. The food is terrible. The service is worse. There was a dead rat floating in my soup. When something like that comes down, man, you got no choice but to make a move in the front office. Good luck going into the offseason and trying to attract talent with that hanging over your head. Look, I don't care how successful this guy's been in the past. You cannot overcome that. And I know he's always been old school or a hard ass. Take your pick. And the old school rules about no slouching in meetings, no hats in meetings, no sunglasses on the practice field, no sitting on your helmet, no sitting on the bench if you're hurt. Maybe that worked in the past. It's not working here. Everybody knows the risk of driving drunk. You could get into a crash. People could get hurt or even killed. But let's take a moment and take a look at some surprising stats. Nearly 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by one-third in the past three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. And many people are unaware that driving while high can be just as dangerous. In 2015 alone, 42% of drivers killed in crashes tested positive for drugs. So it's not harmless, is it? And get this, from 07 to 2015, marijuana use among drivers killed doubled. So the truth is, driving while high is deadly. Stop kidding yourself. If you're impaired from alcohol or drugs, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI, drive sober, or get pulled over. He is a very good friend of the program. He is Jim Trotter. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, I'm doing great. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Good. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Good to have you.
Same to you, brother. Always a pleasure.
You too. All right, Jim. So Jacksonville announced that they were going to relieve Tom Coughlin of his duties as executive VP of football ops. Let me start right there. Jim, what was your reaction when you heard that news?
I wasn't necessarily surprised. What surprised me was the information that came out in the NFLPA statement a couple of days earlier where they said that 25% of the player grievances that it has filed over the last 2 years were against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, that's a culture problem right there. And so I think if you're the owner, and I know Shad Khan came out and said he had made a decision earlier in the year that he was going to make a change, but when that came out, you had to do this now, and you had to send a message to the players, particularly when, and I've never heard this before, where the union was advising players to consider that, take that into consideration when they're deciding where to sign and where to play. That's just unbelievable to me.
Jim Trotter is my guest. Exactly. I've never seen that before. I can't even imagine that. But that's why they did what they had to do. Now, you mentioned you've never seen that, Jim. As somebody who's covered the league a long time, let me transition to this. Jacksonville was one of the teams that could have drafted Lamar Jackson, but they did not. As somebody who has covered the league for as long as you have, how many players have you seen come into the NFL the way Lamar has and transformed a team and an organization as quickly as he has?
It's unusual, Jim, but I say this, you know, we talk so much about Lamar and he deserves a lot of credit, but I give a ton of credit to the organization from this standpoint. The conversations I've had with John Harbaugh about this, if you're going to draft a player with Lamar's skill set, you have to be all in terms of building your offense around that player. And so many NFL head coaches are resistant to that. They typically have their systems. They want to run it their way, and they try and make players fit that. Well, John Harbaugh said, no, we're going to take this player and we're going to fit everything we do around what he does best, and even promoting Greg Roman to offensive coordinator. And what John said to me is, look, you can't dip your toe in the water. You have to go all in if you're going to do this. And so from an organizational standpoint, you know, in my opinion, you have to give the Ravens a ton of credit for that in allowing Lamar Jackson to be Lamar Jackson and to be the transcendent talent that he is. So I don't want to take anything away from him, but I think him being in the right situation, the right structure, is critical, because I think we call so many players busts early in their career and whatnot, and we fail to take into account the circumstances and the context of their situation. And if you get put into a situation where a coach isn't maximizing your ability, your skill set, is that on the player or is that on the coach and the team? And so in this case, that's why I say I think the Ravens organization deserves a lot of credit in the success that Lamar is having, as well as Lamar himself.
We're talking to Jim Trotter, reporter and storyteller for NFL Media. He's a Hall of Fame voter. Now, Jim, you and I have talked many times about Drew Brees over the years, and you've covered him going all the way back to his days in San Diego, which included some really low moments for him personally. So what did you think when you saw him break the career TD record and the single-game completion percentage record at the same time Monday night?
You know, Romy, truthfully, you just, at least for me, I'm never shocked by what Drew does. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Me personally, I have never covered a player with a greater singular focus than Drew Brees. And when he's done playing, he will be a guy that I can look back and say I think he wrung every bit of potential that he had in his body and in his game out and left it all on the field. You know, you talk about those low moments in San Diego. People forget he was benched in San Diego for Doug Flutie, and they were so prepared to move on from him that they had the number one pick in the draft and drafted Eli Manning and made the trade to get Phillip Rivers. And A.J. Smith was a Phillip Rivers guy. And, in fact, if it had not been for Marty Schottenheimer being there and Marty preferring a veteran quarterback, which had always been his history, we might have seen a change quicker than we saw in terms of Drew Brees to Phillip Rivers. So for me, I'm never shocked at what Drew does, because I'll tell you this story. When that trade went down in the draft and Phillip Rivers was perceived to be the guy at that point, and so on the Monday after the draft, you got to go and you got to get a reaction from the incumbent, who's Drew. So I go down to the facility, and it's not open because, you know, they're not allowing the media in at that point. Workouts aren't going on. I go out to the parking lot. I see Drew. He says, meet me inside. I meet him inside, and I said, hey, I need to get your reaction to this trade. And Drew looks at me in all seriousness, and he says, this is my team. We're going to the playoffs, and I'm going to the Pro Bowl. And I think they hadn't had a winning season in 8 years. And I'm just looking at him kind of stunned. And so the season begins. He struggles the first week in Houston where they win, and Marty Schottenheimer kind of puts him on notice. And from that point forward, he plays great. He mid-season ends up being named a Pro Bowl player. I go up to him in the locker room, and I said, hey, Drew, you remember that conversation we had, you know, after the draft? And he says, yeah. And I said, you know, I thought you were delusional, right? And he kind of smiles at me, and he chuckles, and he said, yeah, I know. But that's just him.
Right.
You know, we can say whatever we want, and it means nothing to him. The only thing that matters to him is his belief in himself and his belief in his work ethic and his belief that he can accomplish whatever it is he sets his mind to. And that's why I say I wasn't surprised at all.
Great, great story. Jim Trotter joining us. And Jim, you mentioned Phillip Rivers. So the thinking has always been that he was going to be the man to lead them into that new stadium. But is it possible that we are now seeing the end of an era with Rivers and the Chargers?
I definitely think it's possible, Jim. Look, you know, they wanted the face of the franchise to move that organization into the building. And right now, can you have a quarterback who is turnover prone? And this is not something that's happened this year. This has started in previous seasons, so people are just now focusing on it. When I watch Phillip today, I don't see that same player from this standpoint. Yes, he's lost some zip on some passes. He doesn't throw the deep out as much as he used to some of those plays. But also what I see is a player who appears to be looking at the rush instead of looking at the play and looking downfield. And that tells me that the hits and the sacks that he has taken over recent years has taken a toll, and he gets antsy. And that's why in the fourth quarter you see some of the mistakes and some of the turnovers that we see. And so if you are the Chargers, you have to ask yourself simply from a football standpoint, can we win with this guy going forward? And I'm not so sure that they are of that mind. Look, he's in the last year of his contract. They did not do an extension at the end of the year. They said they would address it after the season. And I think that there is a very real possibility that we will not see him in the new building next year. Now, having said that, it's easy to say make a change. The hard part is, who are you going to replace him with? And they have to come up with a better option. The question is, do they feel they have that? And I don't know. I know Anthony Lynn likes Tyrod Taylor, who is a backup quarterback. He was with him in Buffalo. He knows what he's about. He likes him. But is that a guy that you feel that you can build your franchise around and go into a new building? At this point, we just don't know.
We're talking to Jim Trotter for a couple of more moments. So, Jim, this past Sunday was the final game for the Raiders in Oakland. From both a professional and personal standpoint, how do you feel knowing that there will never be another Raider home game in Oakland or in the state of California?
Oh, man, I can't lie to you. It's disappointing. It's painful. The first football game I ever went to as a kid was a Raiders game, preseason game against the New England Patriots. And, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area, and there was such a bond between that community and that team. You know, Oakland at that time was considered, you know, the stepchild to San Francisco, a blue-collar town, all those sorts of cliches you want to use. And that team, it bonded with that team. There was a special chemistry and relationship. And so for me, it hurt seeing that was going to be the last game. And the other thing that really disappointed me last Sunday was to hear the fans booing the players after the game. I understand they lost, they blew a big lead and all of that. But for me, I never try and tell fans when they can boo and when or where and all of that. But the one thing I look at when you take into account booing is, for me, is effort and preparation, you know, execution. And you can't tell me that Derek Carr and those players were not trying to win that game, you know. And so for Derek to go into the black hole and to have fans booing him when he's trying to pay his respect to them, I just thought was unfortunate and disappointing.
Raider fan going Raider fan. I can't lie to you, Jim. Like, I'm having a tough time refuting that logic, but there's a small piece of me that thought that was so Raider fan of them. That was the most Raider fan thing ever. They wanted to win so badly. The team came from ahead. They melted down. They weren't having it. But again, I can't really refute what you're saying. Let me finally ask you that.
What I think, though, is that fans, I think more than anything, it's directed at ownership. And because they can't get to ownership, they take it out on the players, mm-hmm. which is really unfortunate to me. I think, if anything, when teams move, It's not players who say, we want to move to a different city. It's owners who say, we want to move for whatever reason. And we could get into that. That could take a long conversation. But they don't have a way of expressing that to owner, you know, the fans who are in that city that's being left at the altar, so to speak. So I understood the frustration of the fans. I just felt for the players in that point who are trying to show their respect for the fans and who truly wanted to win that game for them. To have to walk away with those boos, that kind of hurt a little bit.
Jim Trotter, my guest. So, Jim, finally, you and Damian Woody had this great Twitter exchange the other day when he tweeted, quote, I just wiped out a 90-minute workout in 10 minutes eating butter pecan ice cream, end quote. I think we've all been there. So what did you make of his ice cream choice? If you're going to wipe out all that work with ice cream, is butter pecan the way you want to go?
Hell no. I mean, who eats butter pecan ice cream? I just the thought of it makes me, you know, nauseous. So if he had said, look, I knocked it down with some strawberry, banana strawberry or chocolate or you know, some chocolate chip or even mint chocolate, whatever. But butter pecan, I mean, God, Romy, I just had breakfast and now, you know, you got me a little nauseous here with that.
My bad, that's awful. Great, though. I think the notion, though, the point that he had a 90-minute workout, probably felt great coming out of the gym and just smashed it and gave it all back. We've all been there.
Absolutely.
It's just a matter of whether or not you want to waste it on butter pecan. He's a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter and, again, the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. Goes without saying, Jim, I appreciate you very much. Great to have you back. Thank you.
No, brother, thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
Contractors everywhere rely on Ferguson for a wide variety of specialty products, tools, supplies, and services. Access all this and more with the new Ferguson app. It allows you to order on the go, find your nearest location, and quickly scan product barcodes for easy reordering. With tools like this, it is no wonder why ordering with Ferguson is the easiest part of your hard day's work. Download today and get started. My guest is Tom Izzo. Tom, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Well, Jim, it's great to be back. I hope things are going well for you.
Things are going great for me, Tom. Good to hear your voice. Nice to have you. Let me start right here, Tom. I had Leonard Hamilton on the program yesterday, and we started off by talking about how he and his team dropped a video of them singing Silent Night. And I don't want to make this an arms race or anything, but earlier this week, your team's official Twitter account posted a video of you and the team doing Jingle Bells at the Tom Izzo Christmas show. You killed it on the accordion. What do you make of how your guys did with their vocals?
Well, I did kill it on the accordion, and kill it not in a good term, but the only thing I was better than are my guys' voices. How's that? I think I used them to drown my bad play out, but you know, we had some fun, Jim. It's been a little bit of a stressful month for us with things, and yet we're coming back out of it, and it was kind of good to get everybody there laughing and singing, and yet then we had to go on play Northwestern and found a way to win. It's been a strange year in the Big Ten. We're the only team that's got a road win now the first, 14 games. So a lot of season left, though, when you play 20 games. And we're kind of trying to reinvent ourselves a little bit and, making some progress.
We're talking to Tom Izzo. All right, so what about that win over Northwestern? That was last night. Maybe you had a few more turnovers than you would have liked, but you did dominate in the rebounding department. How pleased were you with how your guys hit the glass, and how big of a role did that play in coming home with a win?
Well, it played a big role. You know, we had a 14-point lead, and you're right, we did turn the ball over too much in the last – hell, we had a 12-point lead in the last 2.5 minutes, and but I really like Northwestern. They got a good young team, brand new facility. It was nice to see. But I thought our rebounding then leads to our fast break, and I do think we're running the ball as good as we have in 20 years. So that's a positive. I've got a hell of a point guard in Cassius Winston, who kind of is the straw that stirs the drink. And if he gets in the open court, you know, he's got a lot of ability to find a lot of people, and I think that's what makes rebounding important, is it leads to our good break. What hurt us last night is 16 turnovers that they got 24 points, so they were kind of turnovers for touchdowns where they went down and either shot a quick three or got a layup, and we've got to clean that up, as you do in all sports, if you're going to be successful.
We're talking to Michigan State head basketball coach Tom Izzo. Tom, you mentioned Cassius. I'm going to ask you about him in 1 minute. I do want to ask you about this piece Armin Katayan did recently, a great video piece of you a few weeks back. And to me, the footage from practice is amazing. You're running all over the place. You're firing guys up. It seems like the passion has never been higher. I mean, watching you got me fired up. It seems to me you're more motivated and more passionate than ever before. Does it feel that way to you?
Well, you know, I think right now our team has needed a little something. You know, as you say, we've gone through a little bit of a tough time with Cash and his family. And I think... you know, everybody tells me you got to try to get back to normalcy, which is not easy to do. And my leader on the floor is him, and it was difficult for him. So I think I had to step in a little bit. But I do feel good. You know, I enjoy what I do. I mean, I think we've got some question marks in college basketball right now, but I still love what I do, and I still I think you have to have passion and energy. And speaking of that, you know, when I watch you or listen to you, you haven't changed much either, so maybe we're cut out of the same cloth.
I appreciate you saying that. I hope that's true. Tom Izzo joining us. You know, we got a battle. We have to appreciate it. We have to respect the process and keep going to work. You know, in terms of Cassius, you've had to deal with the passing of Zachary Winston, the younger brother of Cassius. Zach was playing college ball, and a lot of guys on your team knew him. For those who did not know him, what kind of an impact did he have on Cassius and everybody around him?
Well, you know, it's when you say that they were closer than close, you know, you're always supposed to be close with your brothers. But he had two brothers, one a freshman in college, one a sophomore, you know, 2 years younger than him. And they went to a place, Albion, which is about 45 minutes from here. They were here all summer. So it wasn't just Cash's brother. It was my player's friend, you know, and great kid, great student. Just couldn't fight the demons. But it's been a different something I guess I haven't faced before. It's uncharted waters, and you know, when you deal with suicide, it's different than an accident, and because the blame process comes in, and you know, and between him and his mother, there's a lot of blaming going on. I mean, amongst themselves, you know, Cassius, I should have done more. His mother, I should have done more, and that's been hard for Cash, you know. But he's starting to realize that some things you don't have control over, and that's what I'm trying to help him get through. But he's been good statistically in a lot of ways, but he hasn't been himself, and he's getting better. And last night I even saw a few smiles, so that means we're heading in the right direction.
We're talking to Tom Izzo, the head basketball coach, Michigan State. You know, Tom, you've had some really special players in your time there, both in terms of ability and in terms of leadership. I could run down that list. Guys like Mateen, Draymond, Tum-Tum. We'd be here all day listening, guys. I know Cassius has a spot on that list as well. Aside from his National Player of the Year ability, what is it about him and his wisdom that makes him so unique, so special?
Well, you know, you just named a few guys, and, you know, Magic went here, of course, and Draymond and Mateen, but Cassius has that same ability, has that sixth sense to just make other players around him better. What makes him different than Mateen or Draymond or even Magic, believe it or not, is he can really score the ball. I mean, he can really shoot it. He's a point guard that can score it, you know, a little bit like a Scott Skiles was. And yet he's so unselfish that he's just endearing to his teammates. I mean, he really would rather pass it than shoot it. And so that makes him so valuable to our team, because we need his scoring, but people feed off him. And when he's right, we're right. When he's not, it's an effect on us. So I think that's what makes him with Mateen. And as you say, you know, Draymond was those guys that have the ability, the basketball intelligence. Everybody, Cassius has very good academic intelligence, but his basketball intelligence is off the charts.
Tom Izzo joining us. You know, you mentioned Draymond. Speaking of Draymond, I had Golden State GM Bob Myers on the show the day before he and a number of other members of the Warriors organization and team came to your building for the Draymond Green jersey retirement. What was that night like for you, and what does Draymond mean to you?
Well, the night was as strange as it could be, you know, beforehand, Bob, and it was amazing how many people the Warriors brought out. And, of course, we played Duke, and we played poorly. Give Duke credit. They played well. But it still was a night that you just kind of look back, and there's certain people. You know, Mateen was the first one, and Draymond was kind of in the middle that really carry my career. You know, coaches are only as good as the players they coach, And for Draymond, you know, he went from a guy coach to a friend, and friends can tell friends whatever they want, you know. And I say there's times Draymond tells me what he thinks of me, and there's times I tell him what I think of him. But there's a lot of love there, and that night was special. And he was so – it was a tear-jerking night for him to realize his number will be in the rafters for the rest of time. And I think – I was amazed what all he's accomplished, that it meant as much to him as it did, and yet it made me feel good that it did mean that much.
We're talking to Tom Izzo. I appreciate those thoughts. You know, there might be more gifted basketball players than Draymond. Maybe even you've had more gifted players than Draymond, but there aren't many better than Draymond. How do you explain what makes him so special?
Well, it was easy for me, you know, when people came knocking at the door to ask about him, you know, and everybody said he's too short, he's too fat, he's too this, he's too that, he doesn't shoot it well enough. And I kind of agreed with 90% of them. And then I said at the end, but he does one thing that is important to you. He wins. You know, he just knows how to win. He's the toughest, most unselfish winner, you know. And I'm sure Bob told you, and, you know, they got a lot of great players on that team, but he's kind of the anchor. He's kind of the guy that he can stir a lot of things a lot of ways, but believe me, as good as some of those players are, I don't think they win three championships without him, because he just could make the big defensive play, the great screen. He was the ultimate dirt guy. You know, he did all the things that were down and dirty in there that freed people up, that got a big rebound, that made a great assist. Maybe the things that the analytics guys don't look at as much, because is he hitting a three or scoring a lot of points? But the guys that, you know, are coming off those screens like Steph, he just has a way of moving them. And he's a valuable, valuable guy, and one I use every day here.
Tom Izzo, my guest. Let me so quickly follow you up on that as a final thought. Like in football, Tom, yesterday was National Signing Day. It can be easy to get caught up in the rankings. You've talked about recruiting OKGs, our kind of guys. What is an OKG for MSU?
You know what, Jim? One thing I love about your show for all the years I've watched is you do your homework. Because yeah. Anybody could come up with the OKG means you did your homework. You know, our kind of guy just means he doesn't have to be, you know, the McDonald's All-American or the best. He's got to be a guy that has some toughness. But maybe more important than anything, you know, wants to win. You know, we're in a day and age, especially in basketball, where personal agendas take over. And you got guys that want to win. You know, I look at Magic. I really feel LeBron's that way. You know, there's certain guys. Draymond is still one of the best at it. And I'm looking for guys that want to win, that want to be part of a program that has a family base and get along and appreciate the guys that built it before him. But the toughness thing is just big for me. You know, I say you can win a lot of games with certain players, but championships are won with tough people, and both mentally and physically, and that's kind of what we look for.
Tom Izzo, head basketball coach, Michigan State, led them to a national championship. 8 Final Fours, 9 regular season Big Ten titles. They're 8-3, they're 2-0, they're number 15 in the AP poll. Next up, they are hosting Eastern Michigan on Saturday. My man, Tom, so good to get caught up. I appreciate you. I appreciate that. Merry Christmas, and great to have you back in the jungle.
Well, happy holiday to you, Jim, and thanks a lot. Don't forget about me. Have me on again. I'll see you later.
Today's episode of The Daily Jungle is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ, the brand new streaming sports news network. It's live 24/7, and it costs you nothing. That's right, sports coverage that is always on, but always free. I love it. Great content, great intel, and it's free. CBS Sports HQ has coverage which is focused on the game. Lots of highlights, breaking news when it happens, fantasy advice, and something that's important to pretty much everybody, information you can use to win your gambling picks. I know when I turn on CBS Sports HQ, I'm going to get the tips and the trends and the info that I need to make some money. And don't forget, you can get access to all this great coverage completely free. Not free for a week or a month, or if you've got some sort of special cable package, totally and completely free for everybody. You don't even need to log in. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time and watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just sports for real sports fans at the great price of nothing. Again, you do not have to log in or sign up for anything at all. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. 34-13, he defeated Nate Diaz at UFC 244. He recorded the fastest knockout in UFC history at UFC 239. He is the founder of the Jorge Masvidal Network on YouTube. He joins us right now. Jorge, good to have you on. How are you?
How you doing, man? That was a amazing introduction.
Dude, you've had a really good year. Yeah, man, you've had a really good year for yourself. So let me ask you, you won all three fights. You did it in dominating fashion. You're now the official BMF. What does that belt mean to you, and what's it like to be the official BMF?
It means a lot, but one way to describe it, just like it says in the back of the belt, one out of one. You know, there's only one of that belt getting made. There's only one of those belts. There's only one person with that belt. So it's an amazing feeling. The company's been around for 25 years, and in those 25 years, they gave us that privilege to fight for that strap, you know, so it's a very humbling experience.
Jorge Masvidal, my guest, you know, there's the physical aspect, and then there's the mental aspect. You were talking about how in the lead-up to that fight against Nate Diaz, you try to avoid thinking about Roberto Duran walking you out, The Rock presenting you with the belt, whether Nate would be allowed to fight, and more. Because it was still a fight. You had to win the fight. How did you go about blocking out all that noise and just focusing on Nate?
Me personally, I could daydream about fighting a lot, you know. I could see everything, how many inches from me to that individual. When I fake this way, how does he react? When I do that, how does he react, you know. So I could just think about the fight and remind myself why I'm there. I'm here for a fight. If I get shipped over to the next planet, as long as it's for a fight to represent the human race, there'll be no pressure on me. I know what I'm going there for. So that's something that I always just got to remind myself. Let me not worry about Mr. President sitting here watching me compete and me putting on a show for him. No. Quite the opposite. I just got to worry about me just fighting, and everything else will play out how it's supposed to.
Jorge Masvidal joining us. All right, so what about that night when you have Roberto Duran giving you advice before the fight? He walks you out. I mean, you've said it for years. He is your favorite fighter of all time. What was it about Duran and his style that you respected and liked so much?
Just when I look at, like, if it was a video game, and I'm just rating him for offense, defense, power, speed, counter fighting, technique, strategy, all that stuff, he just rates through the charts on everything, heart, conditioning, all that stuff. I think he's damn near as close as you can get to a perfect fighter, what I would describe a perfect fighter. Maybe not the general consensus, but what I think is a perfect fighter, and how mean he is when he knows he hurt a guy and he puts him out, how skilled he is in all ranges, outside, close, inside ranges. He's just a masterful craftsman, and he's one of the best people to ever do it, man, seriously.
Jorge Masvidal joining us on the show. Listen, if we were to go back, you dropped a couple of fights in a row in 2017. Then you had that monster 2019. You told Kevin Ioli one of the big differences was just changing your mindset, in particular, cutting out the negativity. Like, what were the types of things that you were focused on back then, and how do you go about getting it out of your head and getting the clutter out?
I was focused on maybe too much would be one word, one way to describe it. And just a lot of negativity around me. Not that I was focused on negativity, but a lot of negativity was around me. And I cut it. And I cut it from the root, and I cut it in all shapes and sizes. I cut negativity from every chance that I could get. You know, and that's something that's being the time away in the reality show and just being by myself 5-6 hours out in the jungles all day, every day, just by myself, no outside influences, really brought to my mind, you know. It's up to me, my mood. You know, and I'm not going to let nobody change my mood pattern. Even if it's hard for me to have a bad day and be in a bad mood, because that means that I let something outside of me affect me, and I don't let that happen often.
Jorge.
So just from that little thing to just adding more secrets to the recipe and telling people what I was going to do as well, because I had a detailed plan when I came back. I just wasn't going to go in here and gunslinging. No, we had a detailed plan of what we were going to do, how we were going to do it, and we're here now. And 2019 was the year of the dog. 2020 is the year for me to cash in these lottery tickets. I've been busting my ass for 16 years professionally. I'm going to go collect some of these bigger checks right now, and it's going to be at the expenses of all these fighters' heads. To everybody they put in front of me, man, I'm going to give them a baptism.
Jorge Masvidal joining us. What I'm hearing is it's your time. You've put in the time, and now it is your time. Like Nate called you out because he respects you because of how hard you go and because you look to end guys. You've said you're not interested in being the hugging champion. You want to finish guys. When you look around the UFC, are guys like you, guys who want to finish guys, are they becoming more and more rare? Is it harder to find?
Definitely. As the sport gets bigger, you know, big audiences, and maybe people get into it for the wrong reasons. It's kind of like I dated to the Ultimate Fighter kind of for us is kind of TV coming for boxing. When TV first opened up the doors for boxing in many ways, a lot of promoters didn't like that. Some promoters did. And it changed up the landscape of fighting because now guys weren't fighting as regularly. So that started changing. It's the same thing with the Ultimate Fighter. When the Ultimate Fighter came into the picture, it changed the landscape a lot. It invited a lot more people into the sport, but not all of them were fighters. Some of them were athletes. Some of them were maybe kind of tough, maybe a little bit athletic. And it's still awesome. You know, you got to weed those guys out to get to the real fighters.
Jorge, your journey is amazing. Like, if you look at where you were from the Kimbo Slice backyard days to now being the BMF, it really is an amazing story. What about when you got your start? How much of who you are right now and how you think and how you approach it goes back to those days, the backyard days?
Oh, a lot. This guy right now would embarrass the guy in those backyards. But it's the same heart and the same will and determination was there, you know, just to get after it. On the skill set, I'm, of course, 10 million times better. But that hunger was always there to just strive to win, to not give anything to nobody, you know, to lay it all on the line and compete. And something that I love to do is just, I think it's very strong in my DNA, man. That's why it comes so natural to me sometimes.
You know, these guys like Nate. Nate does a real good job of getting in guys' heads. He was not able to do that with you. Ben Askren is another guy who thought he got into your head, and then you got into his face with your knee, and it was over. It really was one of the most amazing moments I've ever seen in sports. When you think back on that fight, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Decision. Nothing half-assed. You know, that camp was a very long camp. The fight was short, but the camp was about 12 weeks of grueling, of every day just pushing myself a little bit more. And in my sport, the awesome thing is that, you know, you have your strength, you also have your weaknesses. And sometimes you got to push it in your weakness for a certain individual that you're going to be competing against because you know he's going to put you in these uncomfortable spots where he's good at. So I literally had to work a lot of my weakness. And it was a very tiring, very draining camp, but it was all worth it. So the day of the fight is I'm walking in there, I'm seeing his body language, I'm seeing how he's looking at me, how he's reacting to the things I'm saying. I go, checkmate, man, I got this guy. He's not going to see it coming. Now all I got to do is pull the trigger. And that to anybody watching might look like, oh, he just ran at him and jumped. But there's a lot of moving components there. There's a lot of trickery going on. There's a lot of things that I did to be able to make that moment happen. And before that moment could happen, I had to see it in my head first. And that's decision. And that's having that attitude that I'm going to get this done no matter what. You know. So that's exactly what I was feeling at that moment. Like, there's no way this guy can stop it. It's getting done. I'm breaking records right now, you know?
Jorge Masvidal, I see you working. So you and Colby Covington were friends. You had the same coach for a long time. But after he beat RDA, he did not pay your coach. What did you make of that at that time?
At first, my initial thing was just to break his face in. But my coach said, that's going to probably get you in jail and you're not going to be able to fight him, blah, blah, blah. Let's let the universe take care of him. And his exact words were, we'll get him in a prize ring and break his jaw. Somebody beat me to that. But his jaw is broken.
His jaw was broken. So what did you make of him after that loss to Usman?
Man, you know, I don't like to always be highly critical of human beings because I'm one and I'm nowhere near perfect. But I'm just not with that your whole career is based out of getting a rise out of people, right? Like, if I come on your show and I'm just saying a bunch of controversial stuff for people to be talking about me, like, man, he went on a Jim Rome show and said all types of fuckery, you know, just to get reactions out of people. It's not really my style of tea, my cup of tea, but, you know, people do it all the time. And he's the number one poster boy for that, right? So he wants to always get a reaction out of people. Now this individual, when people are trying to get a reaction out of him, he's reporting people on Instagram. He took the comments off, so you can't comment on him. And then he was reporting people on Instagram, they were commenting on him he was saying how negative they were towards him and stuff. This is a guy that's calling people virgins. He's calling people nerds that they live at their parents' basements. Marks, snowflakes, making fun of Brazilians. You know, that country, it's not like it's a rich country and it's doing well. They got a lot of poverty over them, and they got a lot of people that take it to heart what he's saying. He doesn't give a flying fuck. And he does that all for a like on Facebook, for a paycheck to go, what, the 3, 4, 5 pay-per-views that it went up with, you know? The guy's a clown, man. He got what he deserved.
Jorge Masvidal joining us for a few more moments. Now, there's been a lot of talk about different opponents for you in your next fight. Usman, Connor, if he beats the Cowboy, a rematch with Nate, a fight with Nick, who wants revenge for his brother. Listen, like you said, it's your time right now. You're holding some cards. Who do you want to fight next?
Man, like you said, my journey's been long, 16 years. I want to be handsomely rewarded for it, because a big part of that 16 years, there was a lot of instability, and money wasn't coming in, man. Paychecks weren't coming in. I wouldn't mind setting up that future for my grandkids. So the fight they could get the biggest zeros attached to it, that's the one that we're going to take. Obviously, Conor fight is out there. The Mayweather fight is out there. They're saying they're bringing him on over to Zuffa Boxing. The Usman fight is out there. I'm the golden ticket in combat sports, especially at 170 pounds. You can't move in that weight class without mentioning me or having to ask permission to the mighty game, bread. And it's just the truth. I might come off ignorant and arrogant, but I've been working my whole life for this, to get to this position where now I could be involved in the biggest fight possible and I could rewrite the history books, you know, because whoever has the belt when I'm done with Conor, that's whose head's getting chopped off. That's a guaranteed thing. And, of course, I'd love to fight Conor, not just because he brings in a lot of cash and eyeballs to the sport, but he's a two-time champion. He's one of the few to do it, and he did it in outstanding fashion. Both guys that he defeated for the belt, he did it with no pressure, no resistance, nothing. So it'd be an honor to fight with him, you know?
He is the BMF. He is the founder of the Jorge Masvidal Network on YouTube. So if you get that shot, if that were to go down, how would that go? Is he big enough? Can he deal with the heat that you have? How do you think that fight would go?
He gets melted. I'm going to, you know, what the world is looking for is for him to suffer and get chastised for some of the things that he's done in public. Everybody's going to feel sorry for him after the fight. I can tell you that much. They'll forgive him all after the fight. I can promise you that. This baptism is going to be a little extra for Mr. Connor.
Jorge Masvidal, my guest. Before you go, man, I could tell you've got that laser focused right now. You know this is your time. But the latest video on your YouTube channel is about your trip to Mexico and your search for the sacred chocolates. Bro, did you find the sacred chocolates? How did that go?
I did find some of the fucking best chocolate I've ever had in my life. No sugar whatsoever. They like sun dry. They put it in, they mix it with cinnamon, a couple other herbs, and let it sit in the sun for like a day or two, and it just gets dried, and it doesn't even taste like chocolate. It tastes fucking amazing, man. That is delicious, my brother. It tastes like just herbs. There's no sugar in there, and it also does a lot of other great beneficial things for men. So that sacred chocolate is very good to our kind.
I love it. 34-13-0. He did defeat Nate Diaz at UFC 244. He did record the fastest knockout in UFC history at UFC 239. You want to check him out. He's got his own network on YouTube, the Jorge Masvidal Network. And again, I want to stress, the BMF. Jorge, great to have you in the jungle. Appreciate you. Appreciate the conversation. Let's be sure we do it again.
Thank you, Jim. Huge fan, man. Thank you for having me on the show. God bless, my brother. You have a great day.
For tomorrow, we have 162 pieces of sound. 162. Last year, we ended up airing 102 audio clips. So you know there's no way we get to all 162. A lot of that is going to end up on the cutting room floor. But we have a 2-year streak of getting from January to December, which is a good thing, and I plan on extending that to 3 years tomorrow. So if you're betting against us, you're doing so at your own demise. We will get to December tomorrow. I'm not going to have to pull the ripcord and bail out in July. We will finish this thing. We will get to December. But since I know we're not going to get to all that sound, why not clear some of it right now and give you a taste of what we're going to get or what you're going to have tomorrow? So let me simultaneously give you a preview while cutting that number 162 down. And since I know you love you, some you, let me reset some clone-only sound starting in February. A lot of regular callers to the program plant their flags in certain corners and their own space. Raider Mike, for instance, he is the king of the silver and black. Bob in Calgary, for better or for worse, and definitely for worse, is the SJP guy. Slash in Brentwood owns the Rockingham real estate. And for some reason, Jeff in SoCal has decided that this is where he wants to live.
Rome, I don't want to talk about the trade deadline or whose mom played basketball back in the day. I want to talk to you today about the most important sporting event that happened this weekend. Jim, with 9:36 left in the first quarter in the Vanderbilt versus Tennessee women's college basketball game, a big rivalry, by the way, history was made in the span of 19 seconds, five missed layups, two blocks by the rim, two blocks by the bottom of the backboard. And then they panned the crowd, and of course, it's a handful of women sipping 72-ounce diet sodas who seem to have that "I need to speak to your manager" haircut.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Jeff. Life choices, Jeff. Resolve to make better ones in 2020. Do better. Do better, Jeff. That was February. Let's go to March. If weird is good, then Jeff in Southfield is incredible, because there is nothing more weird than a take on American cheese.
The forensic evidence was undeniable, Jim. Wisconsin is fat. But what do you expect from a state that has given up literature, science, and the arts for cheese production, cheese consumption, and cheese-related fashion? And the worst kind of cheese, too. Jim, I'm proud to be an American, but I'm not proud of that cheap crap we call American cheese. Not only is American cheese not worthy of having its slices individually wrapped, its outer wrap should be a clown suit. It's the Bozo of cheeses. The number of Europeans whose vacation to America includes wanting the freshest sample of our American cheese is none. When the other cheeses have a party, American cheese sits home uninvited and eats a whole pack of itself from depression.
It's incredible. When the other cheeses have a party, American cheese sits at home and eats a whole pack of itself out of depression. The only thing more weird than that take is the fact that he called back so soon after. Or at least I thought it was him calling back so soon thereafter.
Braddock Corona, you are a cow. A soft, dumb, doe-eyed cow. Standing in a field, waiting for the butcher to come out to chop you with a tri-tip. So Big Daddy Beaks can throw you on the barbecue and smoke you for about 4.5 hours with some cherry wood. Third and Darryl Romy, left, you are the sketchiest, twitchiest individual in the jungle. You are like a sketchy little access deer poking his head up above the tree line so you can see if there are any predators. Well, there are predators, Laffy Taffy. There are. So run on home. And finally, Darryl Romy, I leave you with these words of wisdom. Don't ever, ever, ever leave your girlfriend alone with Motley Crue. They will have sex with her.
Don't ever leave your girlfriend alone with Motley Crue. They will have sex with her. It's not a bad impression. Now, me, I'm going to take the original Jeff over the fake Jeff every single time, but that's not bad. That's not bad at all. Why don't we jump ahead all the way to August? The only thing worse than somebody coming on this show and telling a lame joke and getting run is somebody coming on this show a second time, telling the same lame joke, thinking that I don't remember it, and getting run again. This actually happened in August, courtesy of resident tryhard Jason in Harrisburg.
That's new information on the whole Bob Kraft old junk video. I heard that the release of the video is being held up in the courts, but not for the reason you think, Jim. If you recall, I told you in my last update that the DA's office and an adult film outfit were trying to release it in theaters and make as much money as possible. But that release has been held up because Michael Crichton, who's the creator of Jurassic Park, has filed a copyright violation lawsuit. The defendants in the case said that the lawsuit's ridiculous because where the Jurassic Park logo is the entire skeleton of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, the Jurassic Pork logo consists of only one old bone.
I would tell Jason to get some new material, but he's probably not listening because he's way too busy telling a Jurassic Pork joke to his coworkers right now. All right, so that's a little taste of what we have for you tomorrow. 3 hours of that tomorrow. Make sure you make a note of that. check it out. In the meantime, you want to get in today because you're not getting in tomorrow. And I will get from January to December.